Do you ever feel lonely? I would say at some point, all of us have felt, do feel lonely at times. Maybe a little bit like the psalmist in Psalm 102, starting with verse 4. My heart is blighted and withered like grass. I forget to eat my food. Because of my loud groaning, I am reduced to skin and bones. I am like a desert owl, like an owl among the ruins. I lie awake. I have become like a bird alone on a housetop. The psalmist says that he's like a desert owl, an owl among the ruins. The picture of an owl is kind of a picture of a solitary bird. And I think he highlights it even more when he says an owl among the ruins. So you've got a civilization, a city, something that was there once, but now it's nothing but ruins. And there is this lone owl among the ruins. And he says, I feel like that. Or like a bird alone on a housetop. Alone. Now, I have been greatly blessed throughout my life with good friends and brothers and sisters in Christ. But there have been times in my life when I can go back and think about feeling lonely. There were times in my childhood, there were times when I had plenty of friends around, and there were other times when not so many, not so much. Or I can think of a few cases where I was at a party but didn't really feel a part of what was going on there and felt lonely even in the midst of a crowd. Paul Tillich, the philosophical theologian, once wrote, man is alone because he is man, which is a pretty depressing kind of statement, but there's some truth to it. At some point, I think we have all felt or now feel loneliness. In a sense, to be human is to be lonely. Not all the time, but at least sometimes. And where that comes from, I think, is human beings, one of our deepest needs is for other human beings. In Genesis 2, God had made Adam and said it's not good that man's alone. And so he creates Eve, and through them, community. So it's universal, but at the same time, loneliness is very very individual. No two people travel the same road. We don't, I think, experience loneliness in exactly the same way. While we share the experience, in another sense, it's intensely personal. When if I feel lonely because I'm cut off from some relationship that means a lot to me, you may sort of understand, but you don't really understand what's going on with me. Or if I feel loneliness that comes out of guilt or loneliness in the face of death, I can feel those things, and you may on some level sort of understand them, but you're not exactly in the same place. So nobody can really face my loneliness for me. Loneliness comes in different ways. I mean, there's physical loneliness, where you're cut off from friends, from family, by distance. Or there's what I would call a loneliness of the spirit, where it's not physical distance, it's emotional distance. That's the kind of loneliness that comes when I spoke of being at a party and yet not feeling really a part of what's going on, not feeling connected with what's going on. But the ultimate, I think, the ultimate loneliness is when we somehow just don't feel connected with God. When somewhere in our hearts and minds, we know that God is the one who the only one who can fulfill our deepest needs. And yet we may not always feel connected. I mean, this psalmist here is, in Psalm 102, is crying out to God, and yet on some level he feels cut off, like a lonely owl out in the ruins. People try different things to escape loneliness, and most of them don't work. People try partying if you have enough people around, but that doesn't really take care of loneliness. Other people try joking around. If I make everybody laugh, then I won't feel so lonely. For other people, it's alcohol and drugs, or for others, it's sex. But just because bodies touch doesn't mean that spirits touch or that anything really happens to alleviate our loneliness. So how do we deal with loneliness? I've got the following suggestions. First, if you want to overcome loneliness, then part of the solution is to develop your inner resources. Because there's a difference between being alone and being lonely. And part of the difference in that, I think, is whether a person has inward resources or not. In the book of Proverbs, notice chapter 18, verse 14. Proverbs 18, 14. A man's spirit sustains him in sickness, but a crushed spirit who can bear? Notice there is there's the positive and the negative. The first line is positive. A man's spirit can sustain him in sickness. In other words, this person has inner resources. And even though his or her body is sick, the spirit is positive. The spirit will sustain him. On the other hand, he says, but a crushed spirit, who can bear? A person with a crushed spirit, no matter whether they're well or sick, or whether they're physically isolated, or whether they're physically around a lot of people, it doesn't matter. The writer of Proverbs says, if your spirit is crushed, then your other circumstances really don't matter. And we've known that. We've seen that. We've seen that in ourselves, and we've seen that in other people. A crushed spirit, who can bear? Another passage I'd like for us to look at in the New Testament. 2 Peter chapter 1, verses 5 through 7. For this very reason, make every effort to add to your faith goodness, and to goodness knowledge, and to knowledge self-control, and to self-control perseverance, and to perseverance godliness, and to godliness brotherly kindness, and to brotherly kindness love. What is Peter talking about? These verses have also often been called the Christian graces. But this is a picture of a growing life. You're adding things, and you're making an effort to do this. To faith, you add goodness, to goodness, knowledge, to knowledge, self-control, to self-control, perseverance, to perseverance, godliness, to godliness, brotherly love, or brotherly kindness, to brotherly kindness, love. You're adding. And I'm banging things, but anyway, you're adding things. And if you look at what's being added here, you're adding things on the inside. Your attitude is the key. Two people can be in exactly the same situation, but different attitudes make them react, and they're able to live with or not live with their situation. Louisa May Alcott, who wrote Little Women, was once sick and laid up in bed for an extended period of time. Someone asked her, how can you stand it? And she said, I enjoy my mind. She had found something internal that had nothing to do with the sickness in her body. It had to do with her being sustained by her spirit. She enjoyed her mind. There's a difference between, as I've said, there's a difference between being alone and being lonely. If we find ourselves good company, and that's not an excuse, by the way, for just cutting yourself off from other people. But if we find ourselves good company, then even if we're physically cut off from people, or we're sick or something along those lines, we still have inner resources that will help us. I remember I once had a roommate who could not stand being alone. I mean, he couldn't stand it. If for some reason he was alone, he would have the stereo blaring. He's alone, quiet. He couldn't take it. But that said something about what was going on inside of him, not what was going on around him. There was a deep need that he was seeking to fill, but didn't have the inner resources, inner resources to deal with it. So build up your inner resources. Read good books. Learn to enjoy just the pleasure of reading books, of listening to uplifting music, looking at beautiful things, thinking on spiritual, holy things. I suspect that one of the things that makes loneliness worse for people is concentrating on it. You know, it's one thing to feel some loneliness. It's another thing to concentrate on it, for it to become your hobby. I think about how lonely I am, how miserable I am being lonely. And it just makes the loneliness deeper and harder to deal with. But to concentrate on pleasant thoughts, spiritual things, holy things, thinking about the goodness of God, reliving pleasant memories with God, concentrating on, because of the goodness of God, concentrating on things that are positive rather than negative in our lives. So if you want to overcome loneliness in your life, develop your inner resources. Secondly, reach out to others. In other words, don't just concentrate on yourself. Someone has said that a person who's wrapped up in himself makes a very small package. I remember seeing a biography of the artist, the singer Lily Langtry, and there was this particular scene in there where two of her friends, James Whistler, the artist, and Oscar Wilde, the playwright, were talking to Lily. And as they were talking, Whistler said, "When Oscar and I are together, we only speak of me." And Oscar said, "Yes, James, we only speak of you, but I'm only thinking about myself." But you see, an awful lot of our conversations in the world can be exactly that. I only want to speak about me. That's okay, because I'm only thinking about me. Paul Tournier said that a lot of the conversations that go on in our world are what he calls dialogues of the deaf, where people are talking but not really listening. But reach out to other people, to connect with other people. And the best way to do that, well, there are two parts to it. One is, sometimes, especially if we're lonely, we hold back. We expect somebody else to reach out to us, and maybe they should, but we also need to do some reaching out ourselves. And if in the New Testament, we'll look at a few of those passages, but in the New Testament, there's a group of passages. Just read through the New Testament, especially the letters, although not exclusively that, and look for what are sometimes called the one another passages. depending on your translation, that maybe each other, but it was a lot simpler when they all translated at one another. But anyway, the one another passages are reciprocal. For instance, in John 13, verse 34, Jesus said, "A new commandment I give you, that you love one another as I have loved you." Love one another is reciprocal. It means I love you and you love me. Notice he said, "as I have loved you," and that probably should be a tip-off to us that while it's the relationship is supposed to be reciprocal, and this is the way the relationship of his disciples should be, Jesus says, my loving other people, my loving you, should not be dependent on whether you love me. Okay, love one another says what I'm supposed to do. It doesn't set me up as a judge of what you're doing. It only, I think, really in the end says what I should be doing. I should be loving you. And in the body of Christ, it should be reciprocal where we're loving each other. Or another passage in Galatians 5:13, Paul says, serve one another. And the idea is we take on the role of a servant, and we're looking to meet the needs of other people. Now, what does that do? What's that got to do with loneliness? Because I think very often people become lonely and withdrawn, and they're only thinking about themselves, how lonely they are, how miserable they are, but they're not thinking about anybody else. And when we get outside of ourselves, that's one of the surest cures to loneliness and to depression, is just getting out of yourself and looking at other people and looking at how you might be able to have a positive impact on them. Now, we don't do that just so we won't be lonely. It's sort of you do it out of love and a desire to be the kind of person that Jesus Christ wants you to be, but the indirect benefit, one of them, is that when you get outside of yourself and you concentrate on other people, then you've got less time to just be miserable concentrating on you. So, help a friend, a neighbor, a stranger, an enemy. Volunteer to serve in some way outside of yourself. Really concentrate on making a positive difference in the lives of other people, and you'll find that there's just less room in your life to be lonely. Refuse to wallow in self-pity, but look at how you can actually do things for other people. J. Oswald Sanders wrote, "A warm, stable friendship is one of the most precious gifts life has to offer." Trying to make friends can be risky business, but the risk is worth it. I remember a woman I once knew in a congregation, really sweet lady, but she said that because of the nature of this, the community where she lived and the congregation, it was a revolving door. People came in for a period of time to go to university there, and then they left. And over the years, she had made so many friends just to see them leave. And so she had become closed. No more friendships, it's too painful. But what she found in the end was that the pain of not having those relationships was worse than the pain of losing them. And that's a valuable lesson for us to learn. Yes, it can be risky working to develop friendships, but it's worth the risk. It's worth whatever the price may be, what it may cost. In Colossians chapter 3, notice verses 12 through 14. "Therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Bear with each other and forgive whatever grievances you may have against one another. Forgive as the Lord forgave you, and over all these virtues put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. This passage isn't specifically about how to overcome loneliness, but look at what a rich teaching it gives us on relationships. And if we're developing these kind of relationships, there's just not much room left for us to be lonely. We clothe ourselves, Paul says, with compassion. That means you are showing mercy. You're showing compassion to other people. You're not just looking for them to show compassion to you, but you're showing it to them. You are living with kindness. Our world desperately needs kindness. There's so much. People are so bruised, so wounded by so many things that are going on in the world around them. They need kindness. Humility, rather than propelling ourselves above other people, we should be humbling ourselves. Gentleness, a gentle touch, is powerful. Patience can be very difficult. If I've told you once, I've told you 1,000 times. Don't do that, okay? And they'll invariably do it one more time, okay? But if we remember how patient God has been with us, how many times have I said, I won't do that again? I won't act like that. I won't be selfish. And then I turn around and I do it again. I'm glad God doesn't say, 3 strikes and you're out. You've gone to your limit. Or like Peter in that passage about forgiveness, 7. You've reached your limit of 7. You're done. I'm glad he doesn't do that. And I want to learn from him. Bear with each other. That's, I think, similar or related to patience. And so is forgiveness, forgiving whatever grievances we may have against each other. To forgive is to release. It's not to pretend it didn't happen. It's not to pretend it wasn't wrong, but it is to release it so that you're not tortured by it, so that there are no longer thoughts of revenge that well up inside of you, just to release it. And then he says, over all these virtues, put on love, which binds them together in one wonderful package, in a perfect unity. Again, that passage isn't specifically about even indirectly about overcoming loneliness, but the effect of it is exactly that. If we're getting outside of ourselves and we're not thinking so much about self, but we're thinking about other people and how we might benefit them, how we might help them, then that doesn't leave much room for us to just think about self. So get outside yourself, reach out to other people to build friendships, and reach out to people to serve them, to do some kindness or compassionate act for them. Third, if you want to overcome loneliness in your life, look to God for the ultimate solution. Look to God for the ultimate solution. Don Marquis, who was a journalist and humorist, wrote, "All religion, all life, all art, all expression come down to this, to the effort of the human soul to break through its barrier of loneliness, of intolerable loneliness, and make some contact with another seeking soul, or with what all souls seek, which is, by any name, God." Or Augustine wrote, "We were made for you, and restless are our hearts within us until at last they rest in you." All other relationships may come or go, but if you have a relationship with God, that is one that can last through all eternity. In John 16, last night of Jesus' earthly life before his crucifixion, he has been in chapters 14 through 16 about preparing his disciples, for what will come next. There's a great shock that is going to overcome them. And even though he's told them he's going to die, suffer and die, they haven't grasped it. All the Gospels make that really clear. They don't know what he's up to, but that can't really be. And so in John 16, verse 33, Jesus says, "I have told you these things so that in me you may have peace. In this world you have trouble, but take heart, I have overcome the world." He gives us a peace that the world can't give, and a peace that the world can't take away. And if you look at the verse just before this one, verse 32, Jesus says, "But a time is coming, and it has come, when you will be scattered, each of you to his own home. You will leave me all alone. Yet I am not alone, for my Father is with me." What was true of Jesus can be true of us as his followers. Earlier in the service, we heard a wonderful reading of Psalm 23. Psalm 23 is perhaps the most often used passage in funerals. So much so that some people say, "Oh, you shouldn't use it in a funeral because everybody uses it in a funeral." But there's a reason. There's a reason why it's used so often. "The Lord is my shepherd. I shall lack nothing. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He restores my soul. He guides me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever." When we live in the reality of this psalm, when we can really say, "The Lord is my shepherd. I've got everything I need. I don't lack anything because he's with me. He provides for me. He leads me. He restores me. He guides me. Even in the worst place, in the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil." Why? "For you are with me." To know the presence of God, to know the presence of God in your life is the greatest experience that humans can know. No matter what we're dealing with, no matter what's going on around us, to just know the presence of God, to live in that presence, to know him as shepherd who cares for me, who provides, who is with me, no matter what's going on in my life. Even the picture here of he prepares a table before me in the presence of my enemies. The enemies are glaring, but God is there providing. And to simply dwell in the house of the Lord forever is the most precious of gifts. Henry Francis Light was an old man. He only had a few months to live. He entered his study. He went to a well-worn Bible, fell open to a favorite passage in Luke 24, where two disciples were saying to the risen Jesus, even though they didn't realize it was him at the time, "Abide with us, for it is toward evening and the day is now spent." He read and he reread the passage, and suddenly he no longer felt old and tired. And he penned some words that were later whispered by Edith Cavell as she stood before a firing squad. Words that were sung in more than one occasion, but one of them was when the HMS Stella was sinking during World War II. A woman on the deck began to sing the words, and soon all the passengers who were passing to a watery grave were singing. And this is a song I'd like for us to sing, number 808, Abide With Me.